the wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Israel's economy is now in a crisis as it was hit by a double whammy this year, the so-called judicial overhaul and the U.S.-Israel genocidal war. Local stocks have underperformed global stocks this year. At the beginning of the year, the local stock market was shadowed by growing political uncertainty around the proposed judicial overhaul. The planned proposal sparked fears that the changes to the regime's legal system would threaten the independence of the judiciary and make business and investments less predictable. Over the course of the year, total equity raised from the public plunged to about 8.2 billion shekels from 21.7 billion shekels in 2022, while the average daily trading volume was down 12% year on year. The public withdrew a massive 30 billion shekels from funds that invest in shares and bonds in Tel Aviv, and poured 20.5 billion shekels into funds that invest in securities abroad. And following Israel's genocide in Gaza and the ensuing hostilities, Israeli securities initially dropped and the shekel plunged to the weakest level in more than a decade.
The social media platform X has provided a vital lifeline to journalists debunking Israel's disinformation around its genocidal war on Gaza. Several lies that Israeli occupation forces pushed out were immediately discredited by investigative journalists on the site. For that reason, Elon Musk is simultaneously a key ally and target of the Zionist regime. Musk has been mobilized against by key Zionist lobby groups like the Anti-Defamation League and the Center for Countering Digital Hate. And it is likely that his visit was an opportunity for the Zionist regime to apply more pressure on him to censor the social media platform. During the short pause in Israel's bombing of Gaza, the billionaire owner of the platform X, Elon Musk, traveled to meet with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for an indoctrination session. While in occupied Palestine, he was taken on a guided tour of the Gaza settlement envelope by Netanyahu. A solemn picture was taken with Musk looking down at a baby cot, supposedly littered with bullets from the Palestinian resistance. However, it was revealed that those bullets matched those coming from Israeli tanks rather than Palestinian fighters. And as the war of disinformation continues, large U.S. corporations like Walt Disney, Warner Brothers, and Comcast suspended their ads on X in protest against his alleged anti-Semitism. This has, of course, been lobbied for by Israel's spy agency, the Anti-Defamation League, for some time. The U.S. government has even issued a statement condemning Musk for the abhorrent promotion of anti-Semitic and racist hate. In October, when Israel cut all electronic communications in Gaza, Musk offered to provide his Starlinks to internationally recognized aid organizations in the Strip. This infuriated the Israelis, who vetoed the idea immediately. While on his trip to the settler entity, Musk commented to Israeli President Isaac Herzog that he supported the idea of re-education camps in Gaza to prevent another generation of resistance. He also commented that he would help establish economic prosperity in the area. With the constant stream of contradictory messages, the battle for the soul of Elon Musk continues.
On January the 3rd, 2024, twin terrorist explosions hit an event in the Iranian city of Kerman, marking the fourth anniversary of the assassination of senior Iranian commander Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. The two explosions occurred minutes apart at two different locations packed with civilians. Some of the injured recount the horror that they've been through.
I think it was 3 o'clock when the explosion happened. People were running toward me. I saw several injured lying on the ground. I was scared. It was very awful. The air was dusty. I really don't want to remember that moment again.
There was an explosion that caused a commotion, and suddenly there was a second blast that made people more afraid. Shrapnel could be seen, and people were falling on each other. I can't describe. I can only say that it was a terrible moment.
The terrorist attacks have drawn strong condemnation from Iran, other countries, and international bodies, including the United Nations. The Security Council has called it a reprehensible act whose perpetrators should be held to account. Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi has vowed those behind the cowardly terrorist bombings cannot get away with their crime.
This flood of people that poured towards the grave of Haj Qasem these days, you come to scare the people within your criminal act. You're not strong enough to face the resistance. Your power has lost its effectiveness against the forces of resistance. Now you're targeting innocent people? Know that you will pay a heavy price for this horrible crime.
Meanwhile, the drama took a new twist when the Daesh terrorist group claimed responsibility for the bombings. Some experts argued that the terrorist attacks bore all the hallmarks of an Israeli operation rather than one by Daesh.
Whoever is behind it, and I think we can assume who that is, that this has the United States and Israel written all over it.
Some Iranian media also cast doubt over Daesh being behind the attacks, as the terrorist group has a different modus operandi. These media believe the Daesh statement was in fact drawn up by the Israeli regime. They say this proves Israel is really scared of the consequences of its criminal act and that Daesh is a tool in the hands of the Tel Aviv regime. But whoever behind the deadly terrorist act, one thing is certain. And that is the terrorists have failed to achieve their objectives by killing innocent civilians.
Qasem Soleimani was born on March the 11th, 1957, in the province of Kerman, situated in the south of the Islamic Republic of Iran. At the age of 13, the young Qasem left school and began working on a construction site in a different town to help support his family financially. Over the course of the next decade, he also took part in revolutionary activities against the regime of the Shah. In 1979, when Imam Ruhollah Khomeini led the Islamic Revolution to victory, Haj Qasem joined the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. Despite minimal training, he showed great talent and natural aptitude and rose up the ranks quickly. The following year, in 1980, when Saddam's Iraqi army invaded Iran, a 23-year-old Qasem joined the battle, and as a company leader, he trained and led a group of volunteers from his home district of Kerman into battle. In a quote attributed to Haj Qasem, he says, "I entered the Iran-Iraq War on a 15-day mission and ended up staying until the end." He fought in multiple battles over the course of the war, receiving serious injuries in the Battle of Tariq al-Quds, close to the border with Iraq. After the end of the war, he was deployed in Kerman province, his area of birth, where he garnered a reputation as a formidable combatant against rampant drug smuggling in the region. In the late 90s, he was appointed as the head of the Quds Force of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, a unit dedicated to liberating al-Quds, and spent the following years building up the organization's capabilities and relationships across the region. It was in this role as leader of the Quds Force that he assisted Lebanon in firstly expelling the Israeli occupation in the year 2000, and then in defeating them again during the July War of 2006. But perhaps his greatest victory was in being the person most responsible for the defeat of the Daesh terrorist group, who had taken over huge swaths of territory in Syria and Iraq in 2014. His leadership on the battlefield and his subsequent support for groups trying to expel occupying American forces from West Asia cemented him as a legend amongst the people of the region, while also putting him square in the crosshairs of the mass-murdering U.S. empire and its local lackeys.
The World Health Organization has once again sounded the alarm on deepening humanitarian and medical crisis in war-torn Gaza. It has called on the international community to take urgent steps to alleviate the grave peril facing Palestinians in the besieged territory. According to the latest WHO assessments, Gaza has 13 partially functioning hospitals, 2 minimally functioning ones, and 21 that are not functioning at all.
There are actually no functional hospitals left in the north. Al-Ahli was the last one, but is now minimal functional. And still treating patients but not admitting new ones, along with Al-Shifa, Al-Ada, and Al-Sahaba Hospital. So these hospitals are still sheltering also thousands of displaced people. At Al-Ahli, about 10 staff, all junior doctors and nurses, continue to provide basic first aid, pain management, as much as possible, wound care, and trauma stabilization services.
The Nasser Medical Complex, which is the most important referral hospital in southern Gaza, is partially functioning. The world body has expressed concern about reports of residential areas being ordered to evacuate around the hospital, which are extremely concerning. According to WHO reports and eyewitness accounts, when military activities intensify near the hospital, ambulances, patients, staff, and WHO and partners are unable to reach the complex. The world body has also said that it is working to strengthen and expand the existing struggling health system.
WHO will keep striving to supply health facilities in the northern Gaza, but without fuel, staff, and other essential needs, medicines, medicines won't make a difference, and all patients will die slowly and painfully.
It has also expressed concern about the fresh wave of displacement of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, who have been pushed by Israel to move to further south. It says the displacement of people will further strain health facilities in the south, which are already struggling to meet the population's immense needs. The WHO statement read, "This forced mass movement of people will also lead to more overcrowding, increased risk of infectious diseases, and make it even harder to deliver humanitarian aid." Most of the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip are grappling with terrible injuries, acute hunger, and severe risk of disease. WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom has also repeated a call on the international community to, quote, take urgent steps to alleviate the grave peril facing the population of Gaza. The remarks come a day after the WHO staff went on a high-risk mission to deliver humanitarian supplies to the Al-Shifa Hospital in northern Gaza and Al-Amal Palestine Red Crescent Society in southern Gaza. Both hospitals serve as shelters for displaced Palestinians seeking safety amid relentless Israeli bombardment. At Al-Shifa Hospital, a reported 50,000 people are sheltering, while 14,000 others are at Al-Amal.
Seeing children, women, young men, old men and women, people bleeding out. I, at the same time yesterday at Al-Aqsa, I saw a woman who had multiple gunshot wounds. An attempt was made to refer her, and she was referred back because she was bleeding so heavily. So, I mean, there's blood everywhere in these hospitals at the moment. We're seeing almost only trauma cases come through the door, and at a scale that's quite difficult to believe. It's a bloodbath, as we said before. It's carnage.
They have been injured and have been in the hospital for 10 days. As soon as the Israeli troops withdrew, I rushed to take them. As you can see, they suffer from total burns for no reason. They were left with no food or water and no care. There are other injured members of my family, but I wasn't able to carry them. After I arrived at the hospital, I witnessed massive destruction, an indescribable scene. Patients are scattered in every corner, beds are overturned, and medical material are damaged.
Comments come as Israel is pressing ahead with its genocidal war on the Gaza Strip. From corpses lying unattended on the streets, to hospitals and schools reduced to rubble, to children made orphans and tens of thousands of people rendered homeless, the gory events unfolding in the besieged Gaza Strip since October 7 are a textbook example of genocide and ethnic cleansing. The death toll in the coastal territory since the Israeli regime launched its indiscriminate aerial and ground attacks nearly 3 months ago is now over 21,000, most of them children and women. almost all refugee camps have been rendered uninhabitable due to random strikes, forcing the majority of the population to sleep under the open sky amid heavy winds and heavy downpours. The barbaric attacks were only meant to give an image of victory to its defeated army, which has only succeeded in killing unarmed civilians and destroying civilian facilities.
This is really the worst thing that U.S. and Israel could do to Palestinians. The genocide is the heinous war crimes are gone unnoticed.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the United States, congressional leaders are saying they've reached an agreement on government funding, avoiding a government shutdown later on this month. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. Congressional leaders announced on Sunday, 7th of January, that they have reached an agreement on the overall spending level for the remainder of 2024 as they seek to avoid a government shutdown later on this month. The $1.66 trillion deal includes $886 billion for defense and $772.7 billion for non-defense spending, according to Democratic leaders in Congress. The top line is slightly above the $1.59 trillion that was reached in a bipartisan deal last year and includes changes to discretionary spending that was part of a side agreement between President Biden and then-House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. It cuts $6.1 billion in COVID-19 spending and accelerates cuts to IRS funding. The bipartisan top-line appropriations agreement clears the way for Congress to act over the next few weeks in order to maintain important funding priorities for the American people and avoid a government shutdown. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries and Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, both Democrats, said in a joint statement on Sunday. So far, none of the annual appropriations bills that fund the government have made it through the Republican-controlled House of Representatives and the Democratic-led Senate. Instead, Congress, in recent months, has relied on short-term funding extensions to keep the government running. It's now facing two fast-approaching deadlines to prevent another government shutdown. Veterans programs, transportation, housing, agriculture, and energy departments are funded through to 19th of January, while funding for eight other appropriations bills, including defense, expires on 2nd of February. We must avoid a shutdown, but Congress now faces the challenge of having only 12 days to negotiate and write language, secure passage by both chambers of Congress, and get the first four appropriation bills signed into law, according to Senator from Maine Susan Collins, the top Republican on the Senate Appropriations Committee. Disagreements on the top line have impeded negotiations as House Republicans have insisted on spending levels far less than those established under a bipartisan budget deal reached in May of last year. House Speaker Mike Johnson, a Louisiana Republican, said the agreement will not satisfy everyone because it doesn't cut as much spending as many of us would like, but he touted it as the most favorable budget agreement Republicans have achieved in over a decade. Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries said they have made clear to House Speaker Mike Johnson that Democrats will not support including poison pill policy changes in any of the 12 appropriations bills put before the Congress. Mike Johnson and Chuck Schumer appeared hopeful in recent days that they could reach a deal soon. "We have been working in earnest and in good faith with the Senate and the White House virtually every day through the holiday, trying to come to an agreement," Mike Johnson said last week. Chuck Schumer said last week that he was hopeful there would be an agreement soon. "We've made real good progress," he said, "of budget negotiations." Chuck Schumer added, "I'm hopeful that we can get a budget agreement soon, and I'm hopeful that we could avoid a government shutdown given the progress that we've made." CNN Cable News Network has also covered the same story. House and Senate leaders on Sunday, 7th of January, announced a spending deal for government funding in 2024, the first step to avert a government shutdown later this month, even as that threat still looms large. The top-line numbers agreed to by House Speaker Mike Johnson and Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer include $1.59 trillion for fiscal year 2024, with $886 billion for defense spending and $704 billion in non-defense spending. They also agreed to a $69 billion side deal in adjustments that will go towards non-defense domestic spending. The side deal brings the non-defense spending figure to nearly $773 billion. A Democratic source confirmed to CNN. While their agreement on funding levels will reduce the chances of a government shutdown, there are still major hurdles facing Congress ahead of two funding deadlines, one on 19th of January and the other on 2nd of February. One of those hurdles is how to deal with demands by conservatives to use the funding bill as leverage to impose more stringent immigration and border security demands. Congress will still have to approve funding bills or a stopgap resolution to avoid a government shutdown by those deadlines. And it remains uncertain how that effort will play out, even though Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and House Speaker Mike Johnson have a deal on funding levels. The far-right House Freedom Caucus called the deal negotiated between the House and the Senate leaders a total failure, presenting a challenge for Mike Johnson, who is leading an extremely narrow majority. The opposition from the group, which is a loud and strong contingent in the House of Representatives GOP conference, makes the goal of averting a government shutdown much more of a headache. Freedom Caucus members have been adamant that spending levels be cut dramatically past what congressional leaders announced on Sunday, 7th of January. House Speaker Mike Johnson, in a letter to his Republican colleagues on Sunday, 7th of January, wrote, "We have secured hard-fought concessions to unlock the fiscal year 2024 top-line numbers and allow the Appropriations Committee to finally begin negotiating and completing the 12 annual appropriation bills." The concessions from Democrats, he said, include an additional $10 billion in cuts to the IRS mandatory funding for a total of $20 billion, which was a key part of the Democrats' Inflation Reduction Act. In addition, we will cut $6.1 billion from the Biden administration's continued COVID-era slush funds, which we achieved despite fierce opposition. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, meanwhile, said in a statement, with House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries that the agreement on non-defense discretionary spending will allow Democrats to protect key domestic priorities like veterans' benefits, healthcare, and nutritional assistance from the draconian cuts sought by the Republicans. It will also allow us to keep investments for hardworking American families secured by the legislative achievements of President Biden and Congressional Democrats, the pair wrote. We have made clear to Speaker, House Speaker Mike Johnson, that Democrats will not support including poison pill policy changes in any of the 12 appropriation bills put before the Congress.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with veterans from the Sacred Defense and the Resistance Field. The meeting was held in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniya on September 20, 2023, inaugurating Sacred Defense Week. The culture of resistance has become institutionalized in the country over the past 30-plus years due to the 8 years of resistance during the Sacred Defense. Our country is indebted to the Sacred Defense for its continued existence. Some people want to damage it. Some create doubts about it. Some distort the truth about it. And others tell outright lies about various issues concerning the Sacred Defense. In response to these actions, those who are able to clarify matters should clarify them. We must talk about and clarify the greatness of the Sacred Jihad and the Sacred Defense more and more every day. This is one of our duties. The current activities that are being done which were reported to us now are good, but these should be increased 100-fold.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
We have the capability, we have the resources, and we have the talent. We can make artistic works, we can make good movies, we can write good books, and we can write novels based on real events. We can do these things, but we must also not forget or lose sight of our goal in the process. Sometimes work in the field of the arts is done with the intention of supporting this path, but that's not how it turns out at the end. This is because confusing, worried thoughts come up on the way that cause people to forget and lose sight of the goal. You need to be mindful of this. Abundant work needs to be done in the field of the arts. Everyone should do this in the way they are capable of doing. What I have said so far today was regarding the Sacred Defense. But I would like to say a few words about the armed forces, which is also appropriate for today. During the war, our armed forces worked hard, and they truly made great sacrifices in different areas. I would like to say a few words about the armed forces. First of all, The armed forces are one of the definite honors of every society. Their presence and existence is one of the main elements without which a society cannot survive.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Leaders meeting with people of Kerman and Khuzestan provinces. Saturday, 23rd of December 2023, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had a meeting with two groups of people from Kerman and Khuzestan provinces. At this meeting, which was held in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya in Tehran, the leader talked about the qualities and the characteristics of the people of Kerman and Khuzestan provinces. In this program, we discuss the leader's remarks and points of view expressed at this meeting. Please stay with us. On Saturday, 23rd of December, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had a meeting with a large group of people from Kerman and Khuzestan provinces. The leader talked about the qualities and characteristics of the people of Kerman and Khuzestan provinces. Commenting on Khuzestan province, the leader said this province is one of the principal centers of the Iranian nation's resistance. He added, Khuzestan has been one of the key important centers of the Iranian nation's resistance during the past 130 years. The people of Khuzestan have been a symbol of the Iranian nation's resistance during this period. Commenting further, Ayatollah Khamenei said, the British army had taken control of Iraq and they wanted to dominate and control certain parts of Iran as well. The people of Khuzestan stood against the British based on the fatwa of the religious scholars or ulama of Najaf, such as the late Mirza Muhammad Taqi Shirazi and others. During my trip to Khuzestan province several years ago, they brought me the flag of that great battle to me, and I gifted it to Astana Qudsi Razavi. That flag, which belongs to the people of Khuzestan, is still there. These are important matters in history. They're very valuable. The people of Khuzestan stood up firmly against the British, and not just to defend their own province, but indeed to defend the entire nation. Commenting further, the leader said, during the nationalization of the Iranian oil industry in the early 1950s, Khuzestan was the place of confrontation between the British and the Iranians, in which the Abadan oil refinery, which was in the hands of the British, was seized along with other areas and centers that the British had created for themselves. The people of Khuzestan were right on the front lines of this great confrontation. And most important of all is the resistance of the people of Khuzestan during Saddam's invasion of Iran in 1980. The people of Khuzestan were the first to rise up in defense of the Islamic Republic of Iran. A miscalculation that Saddam had made was that he assumed if he were to attack the cities of Khuzestan, the local Arabs who lived there would join forces with him against their own country. But the Iraqi dictator Saddam had made this miscalculation. The first people who stood up firmly to the Ba'athist enemy were the same people whom Saddam had counted on. A dear martyr of ours, General Ali Hashemi, may God bless his soul, is one such example. Saddam's soldiers had heard about him during the early days of the war, and they spent several years looking for him. They were after Ali Hashemi. The tribes of Khuzestan province, including Arabs, non-Arabs, Lur and Bakhtiari tribe, etc., were the first people who rose up against Saddam Hussein's invasion of Iran. That is a great honor for this province. Khuzestan is an outstanding province from another aspect as well. The blood of the martyrs from all of the country's provinces have been spilled on Khuzestan's soil. But what does that mean? This means that Khuzestan is a symbol of the Iranian nation's solidarity and unity. Young people from all over Iran fought with faith and motivation and sacrificed their lives for the cause of Islam, Iran, and the Islamic Republic. Everything we had heard about the heroism of the Iranian nation throughout history, their dedication, their sacrifices, and their resilience, we saw with our own eyes in Khuzestan province during the sacred defense years. Therefore, Khuzestan became a manifestation of the Iranian nation's outstanding features. Turning to Kerman province, the leader said, as for Kerman province, during the many years in which I have become acquainted with the people of this province, I have seen many shining stars among them. I would like to mention the deep cultural identity in this province and how elites are trained here. This training of elites is one of the features of Kerman province. The moral decency and sincere faith of the people of Kerman province is quite remarkable. Turning to Kerman province's most famous revolutionary icon, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said, yes, just one Qasem Soleimani is enough for not just Kerman province, but for the entire nation of Iran. We are proud of him, this is true, but the important question is, what is the cultural basis that trains someone like Qasem Soleimani? We should make use of this culture. Of course, this cultural basis always exists, but without an Islamic revolution and an Islamic republic, these capabilities will not be manifested. When an Islamic republic is established, these people emerge one after another. People like Martyr Hossein Alam al-Huda, Martyr Ali Hashemi, Martyr Muhammad Ibrahim Hemmat, and Martyr Haj Qasem Soleimani. I want to tell you, the dear youth of Khuzestan and Kerman provinces, to be proud of these traits. Be proud of and appreciate this generational and historical heritage and use these characteristics to build the future of your country. Turning to science and technology, the leader said, based on our past, we should be leading the world's caravan of science today, but this is not the case. Today, we should have been clearly showing the rules and teachings of Islam in every part of people's lives in this country. We should have been showing Islam's capacity to run a country. We have failed to do this, and we are behind. This backwardness must be compensated for. Young people can be the driving engine for advancement of this country. The youth can do this, and may God protect all of you and bless you. Commenting on parliamentary and assembly of experts elections on 1st of March 2024, the leader said, in about 2 months from now, we will have two important elections in this country. The Iranian nation should be prepared for these two elections in the best possible way. One of these elections is for the assembly of experts. The significance of the assembly of experts is that it can choose the right leader for the country whenever necessary, and over time it can monitor and oversee that the right conditions and qualities are maintained in the present leader of the revolution. This is the importance of the assembly of experts elections. But the Majlis parliamentary elections are also very important, and both elections are held simultaneously. According to the constitution, the Islamic Consultative Assembly, the Majlis, the Iranian parliament, sets the course for the country's future. If the country faces problems, legislation and the resourceful presence of the Majlis, the parliament, is required to solve these problems. The leader added, when I spoke to the Iranian nation at the beginning of this year, I mentioned four specifications for these elections. These are 1. Full participation of the people, 2. True competition, 3. Fairness in the true sense of the word, and 4. Election security. Commenting further, Ayatollah Khamenei said, these four specifications must be met, and I will say a few words about them. Why do we have elections? I say that both the Republic and the Islamic aspect of the Islamic Republic of Iran are dependent on elections. Republic means having a democratic government, that is, the country's governance should be in the hands of the people. But how are people supposed to be involved in the country's governance? This can only be achieved through elections. Some people trying to find fault with the need to hold elections. They discourage the people. They do not pay attention to the fact that if there are no elections in the country, there will be a dictatorship, chaos and insecurity. The antidote to chaos and insecurity is elections. Elections are the right way by which the people can ensure national sovereignty, democracy and having a republic in the country. Elections can choose and establish Wali-e-Faqih or the guardian of the Islamic jurist of the country. That is, they can ensure an Islamic system of government. Elections can choose the representative of the Majlis or the parliament to formulate laws for the admission of the country in accordance with Islamic guidelines and Islamic teachings and principles. Therefore, both having a republic and being Islamic relies on elections. So, in the system of the Islamic Republic of Iran, elections are vital and necessary. In these elections, those four points that I mentioned earlier must be met. The first is full participation. Participation means the enthusiastic participation of all the people in the election. An enthusiastic participation of the people shows national unity and the Iranian nation's desire to be present in the scene. National power ensures national unity and national security. When a country has security, then science will advance in that country, the economy will flourish, and the country's cultural, economic, and political problems can be solved. Thus, people's participation in the elections is very necessary for this to happen. Turning to competition in the upcoming elections, the leader said, "What is the meaning of competition? One of the most important issues in election is competition. Competition means everyone should be able to campaign for themselves, but this needs to be done correctly. Election campaigning should be done in an ethical, honest fashion. Campaigning is not slandering others, it is not lying, and it is not making false promises. Campaigning means a person telling their opinions to the people. This is campaigning, and God willing, this opportunity should be given to everyone. And of course, fairness and security are also a requirement for the elections." Turning to Israel's genocidal war in the Gaza Strip, Ayatollah Khamenei said, "As for the international and Islamic issue of Gaza, 2.5 months have passed since the start of the tragedy in Gaza. This tragedy is an unprecedented phenomenon in recent history of the Islamic world. In modern history, perhaps in the last century, there has never been anything similar to this tragedy. It is an unparalleled tragedy. But how is it unprecedented? This event is unprecedented in two ways. From the aspect of the Zionist regime, this event is unprecedented, because never before has the Zionist regime sown such brutality, criminality, and bloodthirstiness. It is unprecedented due to the way that the Zionist regime is killing children and dropping bunker-busting bombs on patients in hospitals. This kind of cruelty and evil is totally unprecedented. And on the other hand, from the side of the Palestinian people and Palestinian fighters, such steadfastness, such patience, and such resilience and resistance is also unprecedented. The Palestinians of Gaza, the Palestinian resistance fighters, are standing like a rock, like a mountain. This is something important. Even though water, food, medicine and fuel are not reaching the people of Gaza, they're still standing strong and refusing to surrender. This is very important. This unwillingness to surrender will make them victorious in the end, and signs of victory are already visible." The leader of the Islamic Revolution quoted this ayah from the Holy Quran. "Indeed, God is with those who are patient." One of the key points in this matter is that the Zionist regime's defeat is not just the defeat of the Zionist regime, it is also the defeat of the United States of America. In the world today, no one says that the Zionist regime is different from the United States or Britain. Everyone knows that they are all the same. The Israeli regime, Britain and the United States are the same. The United States shamelessly vetoes UN Security Council resolutions that have called for an end to fighting in Gaza. There is no difference between the United States and the Israeli regime. They're all the same. What does it mean to veto UN Security Council resolutions which condemn Israel and call for a cessation of hostilities in Gaza? It means the United States is complicit in the dropping of bombs on Palestinian children, Palestinian women, the elderly and the defenseless. The US has been disgraced. The mask covering the true face of Western civilization has fallen off. The Palestinian nation's great victory is that it has discredited the West, the United States of America in particular, and their false claims of human rights. Today, everyone in the world is aware of the masquerades of the United States. They know what the truth is behind use of words like human rights and such things. The monstrous and evil face of the United States and Britain has become apparent for everyone to see. And finally, the leader wished God's greetings and blessings and mercy upon all those present. Thank you.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Illinois Senator Dick Durbin has been called the oldest friend in Congress of AIPAC, the influential pro-Zionist lobbying committee. Protesters gathered outside his home to demand that the second highest ranking Democratic senator stop supporting Israel's latest war on Gaza. But then activists grew tired of being ignored. Protesters crossed from Senator Durbin's high-class residence onto historic Lakeshore Drive along Lake Michigan. Traffic is shut down in both directions on the most important road in the city in a rare and powerful example of local political activism. Protesters told angry motorists that the person they should be blaming was Senator Durbin.
Senator Dick Durbin actually represents the biggest Palestinian constituent population in the United States. He has a duty to be on the front lines of calling for a ceasefire in Gaza.
When police refused to release one of two activists arrested, protesters refused to move for hours.
This is not a religious issue. It's not a political issue. It's a humanitarian crisis. It's an issue that is affecting everybody in the world, or most people, and everybody wants a resolution. So we hope for a peaceful resolution. That's why we're out here.
The Arab population in the United States is about half of the Jewish population, but Arab influence in American politics and culture is relatively non-existent. For over two decades, open discrimination has been constant, as are hypocritical double standards.
I was in Palestine on October 7th. So I've lived my whole life in America. I lived in Palestine for 4 years, but we came here and I grew up here. I was raised here. But I feel like my identity as an American is shattered anytime something happens and I see that my American colleagues and classmates and friends all of a sudden turn a blind eye when it comes to Palestinian life. And it's very disappointing. And especially when you come back and you see that your own tax dollars are being put towards this genocide.
Since October 7th, public opinion has shifted massively against Israel, especially among young voters. That may embolden activists to try even more attention-demanding protests against Israel's atrocities and murder in Palestine. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Shedding light on different aspects of the martyred commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani's illustrious career. Prominent political figures and academics gathered in Tehran to take part in the first international conference dubbed Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, Defender of Human Rights.
Western countries claim to be advocates of human rights, but they are the ones who created the Daesh terrorist group. On the other hand, it was General Soleimani who fought and defeated this terrorist group. He was the one fighting to bring back peace and stability in the region. In practice, he was the one defending human rights.
The resistance front that Haj Qasem created has done great service to Muslims. Americans created Daesh. They even supported the terrorist group in different ways. And this terrorist group was on a mission to tarnish the image of Muslims and Islam. But Haj Qasem confronted them, he fought against them, and defeated the terrorist group to show to the world that the true face of Islam is a religion that seeks peace as a fundamental right that all humans must enjoy.
Head of a special committee formed to follow up on General Soleimani's murder case from legal and international aspects explained that the legal proceedings are more than just a means of seeking justice.
These legal proceedings are an opportunity for international public opinion to familiarize itself with General Soleimani and to understand the true effects of foreign meddling in the region. This is not just an opportunity to seek justice for Haj Qasem, but also to enlighten people worldwide.
The speakers reiterated that the U.S. claims to be a staunch supporter of human rights. Yet the top commander, who defeated the notorious Daesh terrorist group in the region, who clearly violated the most basic human rights, was assassinated by the U.S. This reveals the true colors of American politicians as they use their version of human rights to advance their political agenda.
The participants of this conference believe that the assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani as an anti-terrorist icon in the region proves that the concept of human rights the way Western countries have defined it needs to be revised. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
On Saturday, a conference was held in the Nigerian capital commemorating slain Iranian General Qasem Soleimani on his fourth assassination anniversary. Experts at the conference discussed the brilliant performance of General Qasem Soleimani in fighting terrorism, oppression, and imperialism. They explained that General Soleimani and his Iraqi companion Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis made a huge impact on the global resistance movement, thereby saving humanity from the clutches of sponsors of terrorism like the USA and Israel. The experts noted that the Iranian general had endeavored to protect countries like Yemen, Syria, and Iraq in the face of threats from Daesh and Al-Qaeda.
He developed a lot of Qasem Soleimanis like him and has, motivated resistant praetors to produce more of his own kind. He has also made frameworks for resisting against any type of arrogance and imperialism.
The experts said Iran's alliance with Russia, its solid arms and advisory support to resistance fighters, and the country's pro-resistance diplomacy were part of the legacy of General Soleimani. They said General Soleimani made a leading role in projecting his power across the West Asia region. The experts also noted that the American occupiers in their region were always worried about General Soleimani and his men.
We are going to end their arrogance and colonialism in the Middle East, in the world, in the whole world. And he has achieved that because when you look at imperialism and colonialism, it's going down, both in the way in the Asia and in other parts of the world, because their strength has been weakened.
General Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis were martyred 4 years ago during a drone attack near the Baghdad airport, ordered by then U.S. President Donald Trump.
Meanwhile, members of the Islamic movement in Nigeria have strongly condemned the recent twin blasts that killed dozens in the Iranian southeastern city of Kerman during a ceremony commemorating the martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. They express hope that the perpetrators of the deadly attack will be brought to justice. Tanjum Abdullahi, Abuja.
As the Yemeni army's attacks against Israeli-linked vessels in the Red Sea continue, hundreds of thousands of people filled the streets of the capital Sana'a and other major cities to condemn the Israeli genocide against Palestinians. Protesters chanted slogans supporting the Palestinian resistance and hailing the Yemeni army's operations in the Red Sea.
We came out today to confirm our continued support for the Palestinian cause and Gaza in particular. We will not stop doing this, and we don't care about any alliances, as we are carrying out our religious and humanitarian duty. The Security Council was supposed to protect children and women and leave the siege on the Palestinians, but unfortunately it did not do so, and is even trying to prevent that.
In streets to support our brothers and our fathers in Gaza, and we will support all the people in Gaza